Welcome to Parents' Perspective. 10-year-old Melanie stomped into the house and threw herself across the living room sofa, burying her head in a cushion. "I don't know what to do," she wailed. Her dad put down his pile of mail and sat down beside her. "What's the matter, Pumpkin?" "Oh, it's such a mess," Melanie began, turning over but still clutching the cushion. "Marv invited me to her birthday party, but she didn't invite Cammy."
"Well, that doesn't mean you can't go," her dad began.
"Oh, Daddy, you don't understand," she moaned. "Cammy is my best friend, and she's Marv's friend, too. But they had a fight yesterday, and Marv said she never wanted to see Cammy again, and Cammy said she'd never come to her stupid birthday party, and she said she and Diane are going to have a slumber party instead, and could I come to that?" When she stopped to catch her breath, her dad saw an opening.
"Well, it seems to me you should do what you want to do," her dad ventured.
"Oh, Daddy," she gave her cushion a hard punch, "you just don't get it."
From a parent's perspective, how can we help our children become more competent problem solvers? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest today has been involved in problem solving at many levels. Linda Nunes Schrag has been involved in nonviolence training and conflict resolution since 1976, focusing in recent years on creative conflict resolution workshops and training programs through her organization CRC, Creative Response to Conflict. Linda was an elementary school teacher in private, parochial, and public schools, both in the United States and abroad. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Linda.
Thank you.
What ages are we talking about when we refer to helping kids learn problem-solving strategies?
I would say from age 3 and 4.
That young?
That young. Because you can start, when you start young, you're preparing them for the future.
Why should kids solve their own problems? Speaking as parents, of course, we know a whole lot more. Why shouldn't we just solve it for them?
We think we know a whole lot more, and we do know to some extent. But when we train young people to solve their own problems, they get empowered and they learn how to tackle anything. You're not always going to be with them. So in training them, you're training them to be future problem solvers.
Does this also apply when two siblings are at it again?
Oh, yes. Applies whether with siblings or with friends. They usually know what they want. Mm-hmm. And they know how to get it, but it's sometimes the immediate gratification that comes in the way. And so, it's so important for parents to guide them, though. I'm not saying parents should not be involved. I think parents need to be there to hug them, to guide them, to say, ask them the right questions, and let them think for themselves. It's amazing what they will come up with. In fact, you can be a great relaxer in the background.
We don't run away and hide when they're fighting?
No. In fact, you're there just to watch, to see what's happening. And if it's not going in a nonviolent way, in a peaceful way, then I would say, yes, please intervene. If you have to separate them, you have to do that.
In other words, if there's violence, you need to step in.
Oh, definitely, because you don't want to model that to them. Just asking them questions like the father asked, what happened? You know, you want them to identify the problem. Why do you think she was repeatedly saying you don't understand? Because the dad was thinking for her in that case. And kids will do that to you. But if you allow them to talk and let their feelings out, but from very young age, for example, when I say 3 and 4, you're giving them tools in different ways, the kind of games you play, the kind of stories you read to them. You're teaching them to articulate words that mean feelings. So they're quite aware at that age.
So one of the things we do when they're very little is emphasize, use your words.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Then they have to have words to use them.
Right. So when you teach them those words, or you play with puppets with them, and you show them pictures of how children feel and ask them to say what that word is, they learn those words. That's the language we teach them. Just like you teach them the nose and you point out to the nose. You teach them the mouth. You teach them the different parts of the body. And the same way you teach them the names of those feelings. Mommy said today, I know that because I was associated with my nieces and nephews, both in Tanzania and India, I could be a much better parent because they were there for a short time. I don't have to be totally responsible. But they would listen to me in ways that they would not listen to their own mother.
That makes perfectly good sense. I have a niece who comes and visits every so often, and I remember my youngest son saying, well, why does she pay attention to you? Why does she like you so much? And I felt like saying, well, that's because I'm not her mother.
Linda, what kinds of decisions should we allow or expect our children to make for themselves and at different ages?
Let's take a very young child, even 4 or 5 years old. You know, they're getting very much aware of taste and colors and whole variety. Now, it's an opportunity for you to be able to indulge in that. There are times, of course, they are going to want to choose clothes that are not appropriate. You don't want them to go to school or to daycare with their 90s on. But if there's going to be a major, major tantrum, and you have to make a choice, the watch is clicking, how much will it hurt for that child to go in the 90 when you think about the dangers of being late for your work? But wrap a pair of pants or a dress and take it with her to school. When she gets there, she'll see she's an unusual one and she'll want to change. But you wouldn't do that every day. Once in a while, you say, okay. But give them alternatives. First, you try, if she insists, and it's a girl, or he insists on wearing something totally out of the way, that you try to entice her with different colors or different types. But I would give them some choice before saying no.
So it's not worth battling over the clothes at
right,
that point.
Right, right, right. And I think alternatives also give kids a model of there's only, no, it's not just one way about something. And if we put that in, instill that very early on, I think people grow with the idea. And brainstorming, you'll be surprised how young people at whatever age use brainstorming.
Could you give us an example of what you mean?
For example, you say, these are all the dresses you have. Which one would you like to wear? And I would say, like, the red one, and she would say the green one, and you kind of make it like play. And then okay, we've chosen four, don't go too far. And then you say, okay, which of these four do you want? And then they choose that.
We know parents who also, like the night before, take out two things and say, now tomorrow when you go to school, would you like to wear the red shirt or the green shirt? So that the choices are fairly limited, but there is a sense of choice.
That's very good. They're doing it ahead of time, the night before.
Is there a difference in the strategy that you would use for teenagers, for example? You can't take their clothes out ahead of time, but are there certain kinds of problem-solving things that you would suggest parents could do with teens that would be less painful than other things?
And choices.
And choices. I think if limitations have been set earlier, it wouldn't be difficult. But let's say a parent has not set limitations and they have to. The cost of clothes are quite something. And so if the teenager wants the parent to buy expensive clothes, that's a kind of really, or clothes that have brand names that are important to them. And here comes in the peer pressure, you know. I think really having a conversation ahead of time and letting the teenager know what the budget is like, what are the consequences of some things, and getting their involvement.
We've both put our different sons on clothing budgets when they came to the point where they needed to have these designer labels or something. And one of my sons ended up having, I think, one pair of pants for a very long period of time because he had used his budget on that. And so it had to be washed a whole lot.
And, you know, sometimes I wouldn't say you give in, you give to. With the notion of giving to is a little different than giving in, because that philosophy is a reminder to the child that sometimes you're sharing power. Mm-hmm. You don't have to take all the power all the time.
I think that's probably reassuring to a child that he has some power.
Mm-hmm. We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on helping children learn to solve problems.
The excellent new book, Parents as Mentors, by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is a practical guide to bringing out the abilities in your child. Parents as Mentors is available at all bookstores.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we are talking with Linda Nunez-Schrag about helping children learn to solve problems.
It seems like it would be even more important when kids are making choices, and Sandy raised the issue of teenagers, for example. Choices, how much decision-making comes in when they choose friends. When they're little, we can choose pretty much who they associate with. If they are with a child we don't like the influence of, we have the power to take them to a different group or have them participate with different kids. But teenagers are out and about much more. How much decision-making do we grant here?
As a parent, I would invite my children's friends to the house sometimes. In fact, even when they were young, if you didn't want so-and-so to either influence or be part of that group, have a conversation ahead of time with your own child of what are some of the things you want to see them associate with and why you would not. And then also have a conversation with the other parent. I think both parents need to have a conversation. I know it's very difficult now because they can always find another way. But I think if they know the consequences of such an act, they are bound to start asking the questions that somewhere along the line they might ask at least one question.
Are you thinking about little kids?
No, I'm thinking of older ones. Now, okay. For example, lots of kids do pretty crazy things sometimes. Some things like I wouldn't have done my time because I was protected to a great extent. But kids of today will take a car whether they have the license or not. Kids will think sitting in the back seat doesn't matter. I don't have to put a seat belt. But I think we can only try our best when it's teenagers. But I think, like Gandhi would say, you have to start when they are children to instill peace skills in them. And I always say to Gandhi, we have to do it with the parents. You just cannot do it only with the kids, you know. Because the parents are the nearest ones, and then the teachers to reinforce.
How can we teach our children to make choices?
I would suggest that we get them to make the choices first, what they would do. And if anything is missing in them, then you add to that. So give them some kind of opportunity to experiment, as it were. And then for each choice that they make, let's talk with them about the consequences so they know that there are consequences. If they get into that habit, it's like an automatic thing. They will think about it. So you brainstorm with them. You allow them to experiment. So each time they make either a mistake or not a mistake, a good choice or a bad choice, you sit back with them and say, okay, listen, what happened here? So they know there are consequences for both good and bad, but they need to evaluate. So I think the process of evaluating is a very great skill. And doing it, we do that in all our workshops. We have an evaluation process. And then another process we have is application. We ask people how they felt about something and how they can apply it. It's a constant reinforcement of how we can apply what we learned. Just like when you were suggesting the problem-solving skills. If you just problem-solve only at the head level and not really at a heart level, where people are really listening to each other and allowing for the wildest brainstorm possible, you know, and let them see that they have imagination.
It sounds like, too, you can use an experience that a child has had where there has been a logical consequence and then say, besides, well, what happened, if you had it to do over again, what would you do?
That's a great idea.
Do the basic principles of problem solving apply to all kinds of problems?
Mostly, essentially, first identifying the problem. And they may not identify the problem right away. Never mind. Just let them sort of guess what the problem might be. It doesn't have to be the exact right core piece of it. There might be so many other issues around it. But as you allow the child to talk, you really find out what the real problem is. I remember my younger brother always got into messes. Oh, God. He was like, in our house, the famous one. And so, but I think back about how my parents treated that. They always believed he was in the wrong. And possibly he was in the wrong most of the time. Mm-hmm. But there was this one time I remember very clearly how my brother-in-law decided to sit down and let's hear his version of it. And a parent came to kind of quarrel with my parents about their son. And on hearing his side of the story, we found out that there was some kind of provocation on the part of the other boy, to the extent that he was making fun of the new brother-in-law. And my brother is very family-oriented, so he didn't want to hear anybody make fun of his brother-in-law's nose. So that was such a turning point for my young brother, to find that somebody finally listened to him. And the parent felt so ashamed for having come to solve his child's problem. Now, if it was both of them solving their problems, it might have been different. Mm-hmm. So he went with his face cast down.
Isn't that interesting?
Now, you mentioned first identify the problem, then what?
Check that both people realize that they agree to that, that that is the problem, because it may be a problem for one person and not the other. I would say setting some ground rules are really important, like respecting each other's points of view and realizing that people are going to share from their perspective. And that there's no
for the conversation.
For the conversation, and no name calling, no put downs, very essential. And confidentiality, because sometimes you reveal things that you don't want to be heard around. Among your friends especially, you know, young people are really sensitive about those things. We don't realize. But if you create a safe environment for them, they will share openly and easily.
So some of this stuff needs to be said up front by the parent.
By the parent or
we'll
the mediator, whoever.
Us.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this remains here. Mm-hmm. And so if you find that they're stuck after they have decided. So from your point of view, what was the problem? From your point of view, what was the problem? And do you agree to his perspective? No. And so he fills in the details. That's, so till you come, just the back and forth, when the problem has finally been decided that both agree that that is the problem, then you ask them, put it back to them, give them that power, as it were. So what would you do in a case like that? How would you tackle this thing where both of you are happy? If you say, how will you tackle this, you might get a different reply. But if you say, how you tackle it, both of you are happy, then they have to start thinking. The wonderful thing about problem solving is you really use your critical thinking powers. And this is what I like about our model of both problem solving and conflict resolution. You let the kid, whatever age, I know I'm trying to stop the word kid, saying kid, but it's said affectionately. Children of all ages, helping them, just guiding them, telling them that it's all right to feel this way. It's all right to feel mad. You don't have to act mad. Mm-hmm. And making that distinction between acting out the feeling and expressing a feeling.
And maybe for younger kids, or even for older kids, there could be ways of acting on the feeling that are acceptable, punching a pillow or, you know, any number of things.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on helping children learn to solve problems.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. Today we are talking with Linda Nunes-Schrag about helping children learn to solve problems.
My youngest nephew, when he used to get mad, he would take his hand and spread out. I mean, whatever was on the table would be out on the floor. And then I would hear something in the background. And so I came running, what happened? No, through the tears, he's trying to talk. And I'm saying, go to the bathroom. Wash your face, and then I would say, put some powder. It's a very Indian thing, I guess. You put powder just to cool off, just dusting powder, not anything fancy, just talcum powder. Like babies get powder, you know, when you bathe them. And baby powder is famous in our household. And then he would cool down. So I said, now tell me what happened. So the problem solving, that aspect could be there that we should almost remember the cool off period. people cannot talk about the real thing when they're mad. And you say, okay, now I know that you're feeling better. Tell me. Mm-hmm. And I think they feel affirmed also, all of us. And they feel some empathy when you are willing to listen to them. So the rest will just flow.
So it really is a tension breaker so that then the constructive work can begin.
Exactly.
Linda, what resources do you suggest for parents who want to better help their children with problem solving?
You know, I really believe very strongly in experiential training. When you think that we have parents have years and years of no access to another alternative method, most of us grew up with a very important job as parenting. And have you taken any course, any training? I mean, if you go to do computers, we take training. If you want to become a doctor, you take all kinds of training and internships, etc. But I find the life of a parent is something that we just model from our parents and from the parents of parents. So I would say very, very strongly, parents ought to take training. Training, they can either take parent effectiveness training, or they can take our methods of conflict resolution, which are both for parents, teachers, children. It's for all ages.
How would parents across the country be able to access conflict resolution training?
Now, that is, they could invite us to wherever. We are happy to go.
Packed?
Yeah, we are really, this subject is so close to my heart and most of our facilitators that we'd love to go anywhere. But being as it were, that may not happen, we have a website that they might like to go into. Our own website is www.crcca.org.
Can you say that one more time? People may be rushing for a pencil.
Sure. It's www.crcca.org. And I have put over there some real exciting experiences that some of our facilitators have used for parties, how to have a party with a conflict-free opportunity. And she took toilet paper, you won't be surprised, and she gave children to model clothing. and then she arranged to give them a slice of cake and clean up the place all in 20 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
It was wonderful. She said that was such an accomplishment. Mm-hmm. So there are things like that people have tried out with games and with activities.
Now, is she available for birthday parties in this area?
sure. And you know what? She's a lawyer in the Department of Justice, but she loved this kind of work. She came to volunteer at my office. And as a thank you, I offered her free training. I wouldn't say free because she volunteered, but it was like an exchange, a thank you. We also have publications for sale. We have helpful reading for parents, stories that they can use. And we have some conflict resolution bibliography for young children and a lot of other recommended reading. If people are interested, they could write to CRC 7710 Carroll Avenue in Tacoma Park, Maryland. And the zip is 20912.
I'm going to let you say it again because we may still have people who haven't gotten pencil.
It's 7710 Carroll Avenue, spelled with a C, Tacoma Park, Maryland.
Can you spell that?
Tacoma Park, Maryland, 20912. Our phone number is 301-270-1005.
I'm going to say that again.
301-270-1005.
Okay,
and the email is ccrcca@juno.com.
Okay, want to do that one more time too?
Sure. The email is ccrcca@juno.com. I'd also like to mention that CRC, or CCRC as we are sometimes called, which is Children's Creative Response to Conflict, has branches in many countries, at least 30 countries, including the U.S. We had one in Russia, several in South America. I will put these on the website so you can go into that and you know, call on them if you need help.
Okay. My guess is you're going to have a lot of hits on your website and the phone is going to be ringing off the hook. Our special thanks to Linda Nunez-Schrag for helping us with ways to help our kids learn to resolve their own problems.
Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Parents as Mentors. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And tell us what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning in from. Parents as Mentors is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents Perspective and our book, Parents as Mentors, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.